Los Angeles Public Library had quite an assortment, especially of materials that I was using, and I was also then changing slightly to help out, because the only time I could work on my own topic was when I, in the summertime, when I went to the Bancroft Library, which is in it. So I was, in the meantime, picking up my old subject of the French in California. And that, plus the fact that they had a good collection of standard State Historical Society publications in Los Angeles, is why I went there. I went to Los Angeles for other reasons. First of all, my parents were there, and when I get enough laundry to throw it in with my mama, I'd come in and do it. Oh, yes.
But
oh, yes.
You never told me why you chose to stay in San Diego as opposed to Oklahoma.
I didn't think too much. The university I probably would have gone to, but the Oklahoma State at the time, I tell you this, something else, and why I could have had it, whether I wanted to or not. The head of the history department, Reynolds, had come out to Berkeley when I was in a graduate student there, and joined Bolton Seminar into there, and had a desk almost next to mine. And I knew Reynolds, who was a much older man, and had been a professor for a long time. But he wanted to get his M.A. and then his Ph.D. So when they, Bolton and he, got together on a topic into there, we began to talk to each other very carefully, and he was about ready to submit the thing, less than a term paper, when I said, "Did you see this?" Or did you? "No, no, no." So I gave him all his materials. He'd rewrite it in 2 weeks and present it in there. And Bolton, who was always a kind fella, who knew what was scholarship from top to bottom. But he always had an unusual thing, different from most of his colleagues. He granted many an M.A. degree that was really not worth it. Mm-hmm. But with it went a notice: don't try to go on. Oh. And with it came, if you're a good one, please, if you could, go on, and so on down the line. Well, he gave Reynolds his thesis, which was not even a good first-term paper. Later on, he got his Ph.D. at another institution into there, but he always kept and always had a good spot for me. And that was one of the major reasons I think I turned out. Plus the question of whether or not I was a good Californian. I had one year Iowa. That's enough.
All that there. Snow.
Well, there are lots of reasons why I did. In the long run, I don't know whether it came out better. I don't know. Salary wise and so on, it was not as good. Except during the Depression, we were better off here than there. Mm-hmm. And a few other things. I forgot to tell you that when in Iowa, I also not only got to know what Midwesterners were, but I also found out what it was to have trouble with banks. My bank was going under. They had them during that time because of the agricultural depression. And then I knew what it was to be caught without money for a while. But it was my friends and the rest of them that kept us through. My bank did not fail, finally. But it was on the verge.
Wow.
And they saved it into the time. So these are all experiences that I remember, and I still remember my experiences at Iowa. Oh, yes. About skidding on the ice and everything like that.
Wow.
All of those experiences I learned during that time, and I'd prefer to stay in California, despite all. There's another thing, and I think I ought to jump ahead just for a minute in here to tell you what it is. When I moved from Oakland to Berkeley, when I became a graduate student, I had to find a place because of being Jewish, for spending my Sabbath, because I've always kept the Sabbath. And so I was invited to Rabbi Hirsch's place to spend my weekends in San Francisco. And for 2 years as a graduate student, I did. I was in that house. That's a house with many children. There were 9 children, 4 daughters and 5 sons, the third of whom was Heidi, who came in. And that's where I think the romance might have been, although I was going out with the older daughter in order to keep company with the friends and so on, rather than for myself, because I didn't pay much attention. I was never a romantic character. It's one of the reasons why I've always said that to get through college at such a young age as I did is not good in many respects. But when I was a senior, as an undergraduate, I never cared about it and never went to any of the events. But when I got my PhD, and I was 19, and I was 21, then I began to go into all senior duties and things like that. And that's probably where we kept up a correspondence and with Heidi all the time during that time. But I refused to get married until I cleared my debts from my father, everything else, for which my father always held back. He, of course, it took me 2 years to pay it back.
Well, that wasn't a very long time. So it'd be your savings from Iowa,
that's
and then
right.
From
that's right.
Savings here from in Iowa, San Diego.
And from here, when I got from San Diego, where I got a bigger salary at the time, and that was a problem that I'll come to in just a minute in here, because when it came at the end of the semester and I went in, and Hardy told me, he says, "Well, now let's see what we can do about a salary." He brought me down to $2,500 a year as assistant professor. Now, I thought that was fine for 10, but he said that was 10 months salary, not 12 months. And that I didn't know. I said, I thought I was a $250, that's $3,000. I was a little bit mad about that. And he saw it, and he didn't want to give in. He says, "I'll give you $250 more. That's $27,500," he said in there. But then I was just about ready to not say anything. This is before I knew the other job anyway. The time he called me back, he says, "I'll tell you what I'll do." I said, because I thought I was getting $3,000, the big salary, $250 a month into there. He says, "I'll tell you what I'll do. You develop an extension course, and I'll give you $250. That is, that's the Scotch nature coming up." I said, "That I would do." That's a very interesting, that's an important part of the story here, by the way, into there. In the meantime, there's another proposition into there. When I used to go up every month for 3 days into there, they began to have rumors among my colleagues, especially the women. And they thought I was playing around up there and afraid down here, so I was playing around with some women into there. And I didn't know anything about what's going on. I never paid any attention to rumors at any time. Oh, this game, there's several things that happened in that. When my first article, the second article, the real one, on the revolution, during the revolution, the Anglo-Spanish frontier I told you about, mm-hmm. that really reached its publication when I got here. I'd finished it, it had been accepted before I got here, but we went over it and I asked my colleague, and I will not tell you her name, the English department, to go over it. For grammar and for other things as I usually wanted to. She did. I gave her a present of some sort. She asked for it into that. But when it came out, And they gave me my reprints. I don't remember now whether I'm guilty or not. I might be, but I don't think so. They put on the outside, Abraham P. Nassiter, Professor of History, San Diego Teachers College. Well, she took that to Hardy, and two others did too, and says, what do you mean there's a professor, a young one? We've been here for a long time. They got their promotions. I never did. I never once.
So it should have read assistant professor?
Assistant professor, yeah.
And that bothered everyone.
That bothered them. The other thing that bothered them is that they thought I was playing around with them. But now that I was getting paid back, and this is already in the 28, going towards the end of it, past the next summer when I was back in San Francisco, and over there anyway, at the time, and in there, so that in 1920, early 29, when the faculty gave a big dance at the end of the year for ourselves, I brought Idy down, I was engaged to her then, and introduced her from San Francisco. They all gasped because I was only going to Los Angeles. I didn't go to San Francisco. I never paid any attention. That stopped. And squatch that girl. But these things happen around here, and I didn't know the difference. As a matter of cold fact, I was married on September the 8th, 1929. Then September the 9th was admission day and a holiday, which was Monday. Tuesday, classes began. And all I had was two salary checks waiting for me because I'm paid on a 12-month basis now. And I hadn't collected during the summer in that time, but I paid my father $1,900. I didn't pay him the rest of it into there. He made up for that, but later on, in the first 2 years here, as I'll tell you a little later on, into there. And so we came down here.
How did you travel at the time? You drove a car or train?
Train. And then my sister's automobile I had and brought it down from Los Angeles and had it here for a while. But the first year I didn't have a car. It was after the second year that I had a car. We lived just a short distance away. Into there, but that was the got married and started out.
So that was your honeymoon, starting to teach, huh?
Yeah, that's the only honeymoon. I had to come down from San Francisco, that was.
You had to bring her, right? All her things and.
Well, that's what we did. And.
What sort of teaching load would you have then?
I had 15 hours, but it was made up at the time of only two classes and then all the sections. See, I had quiz sections ourselves.
Is that comparable to the kind of teaching load an assistant professor would have now, do you think, or it's much
no,
more?
No, now it's 12 hours, mm-hmm. But it was 15 for a long time. Leonard fought for the 12 hours, and we did get it down to 12 hours, but I was not liked for quite a while around here because I wanted to take care of the students that they went through, and I never taught less than 14 hours, and I always took in bigger classes than the rest of them over the limits. That's why a lot of things happened around here, but that's part of teaching the way I look at it. I'm not but Leonard and the rest of them, they wouldn't.
So how long was it before the history department got any larger? Now, there were the three of you, right?
No, not until after the war.
So this university stayed relatively small.
Oh, no, we were getting bigger. When we came out here, you see, when I was the first year married, that's about my second, 2.5 years here, mm-hmm. into here. Then I was awarded the Social Science Research Fellowship.
So back to the archives.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And that's a belated, I always call that a belated honeymoon.
Okay.
See? End of the time.
So this how long did they let you leave at that?
Oh, I got a year's leave of absence.
And then?
Yeah.
1930.
That was 1930, 1931. Oh, yeah. I got a year's leave of absence, and Charlie Nowell came down from Berkeley and took my place here during that year. There's a very interesting story with regard to that. When the Social Science Research Council just started to give its fellowship program, I applied for, and they said they wanted and arranged for a meeting, an interview with their secretary, and I had to go up to Los Angeles to meet him, which I did, talk to him about what I was interested in, what I was doing. And then he began to talk on other issues of, did I ever hear of a woman, oh, what's her name? I forgot. I said, yes, sure. I said, she got her master's degree from Berkeley and was given a fellowship to Paris, and it's on account of her why they won't give any women any more fellowships, because she was the second time I would get over to Paris and got married, and that was the end and never finished through her name. She says, yes, I know. I married her in Paris.
Oh, no.
And that's sharp. And what's her name? I knew her very well. I knew her. His name was Sharp, and the married name in there. Well, I thought I was gone, but I got the fellowship. I got the fellowship.
Now, who was giving the fellowship?
The Social Science Research Council of New York.
And, oh, from New York.
Oh, yes. This is the national one.
Right.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. Now, there was the problem. This is the, don't forget, this is 1931. 30, 31. This is the Deep Depression days. Oh, oh yes. And we went over. I took a little side passage, landed in England, went across over to Holland, Belgium. And one day, the only time I was ever in Germany, Frankfurt, and then down to Paris, where we stayed. In Paris, after about 3 months, I began to get shaky on money problems, and I still had to go to Spain. That was my major thing, was I going to Spain. And we couldn't get any help, not from her parents, anyone else. And so I had to send her home. And I sent her home. See, I waited until she got her degree at the university. She got it in 29, in May, and we got married in September. See, she was on the debating team, by the way. And so I said, Idie, I says, you go back to the university and get a secondary teaching credential. I don't give a damn if you ever use it, but in case anything happens to me. And she did go back, and she got her credential, while I went for another 9 months down to Spain. Now, here comes the problems that we met into there. When I was in Paris, of course, this is not, and I know something about the archives now, I know what to work on into there, and I knew what permission, but in between that time, in Paris, I had made the friends of Doisier, D-O-Y-S-I-E, who was the library, with the French worker for the Carnegie Institute, and who was also working for the Library of Congress, and all Americans always used him for any documentary things that we could. And I had used him and made his friendship when I was there the first time, and he copied a few documents for me and sent them to me. But while I was back here in this country, between my first and second one, I heard from one of my successors as the Native Sons Fellow. I heard that the consular archive, there was a box of consular archives in France right in my period that were there in the archives and gave me the number. So I immediately wrote to Doisier to go copy the entire box, which he did, and which I got, and which is one of the major reasons why I was using Los Angeles during this time, and that became my first book, which is The French Activities in California, published a little bit later. But I published it in a magazine in California Historical Quarterly all throughout these first years, 1930, 31, 32, 33, 34. Huh. So I took a couple of those with me. And I went up to him and I said, hey, you got them? Ah, no, we haven't. I says, you don't tell me that. I got them. He says, what, you got them? And I showed it to him, which was a mistake. The next thing I knew, I was thrown out of the archives of the Foreign Office. Not the Archive National,
right,
that was open.
Right.
That's in the Quai d'Orsay. And they called me in, because I was then working on the French. And I had always given them, you have to give them a topic when you go there, for which permission was granted by the office. Thank God, under Robertson's tutelage, I asked, I'm interested in the French in the Trans-Mississippi West.
Which is quite broad. That could have kept you going.
And at that moment, when they saw it there and I was asking for them, I was in the Hawaiian Islands series.
Oh.
And they took them all away from me. Wouldn't let me in. And they says, your permission says California materials. I says, well, Hawaii is a part of it. Oh, I said, next you want us to go to Timbuktu.
China.
I said, well, what do you want me to do? Ask for permission again? No. They said, no, you've got permission. And I said, well, I got to go to Spain, so I'm going to Spain anyway. And in the meantime, I talked to Doisier, and he said he would talk them over to him. And when I was in Spain, I got notice that I'd have to hire somebody to look through the Hawaiian series just to see if there's any California material. Naturally, I hired Doisier. He found, I think, 30 or 40 or 50 items. When I went through the 6 volumes, I found 10 times that much.
Oh, yeah.
But that's all right. But I got back later on, coming back onto that. But no more of the consular archives. Oh, no. That's still the diplomatic.
Why are they so fussy about, why were they?
That I found out later. In my third trip, I found it out.
In the 50s, right.
And I might as well tell you now, but I'll tell you later. And when I went in the 50s into there, the archives were open to 1870. And they had a series called the Consular Correspondence Open. All open till 1870. The reason why I was not allowed is because they will not allow anybody to use any documents that are not bound. Mm-hmm. And the documents in the consular series that I wanted are all bound in 1934, 33, 34, and 35. That I found out later on. And that, I think, is the reason for it. That's the reason for it.
Do you know if that's true today?
What? Oh, I'm quite sure it is.
Yeah.
Because you can't see certain documentations that are not that are not in there, they gave me a special privilege in 50 for one or two documents. I never went in to collect them, they just brought them out for me.
Yeah.
That was because they wanted something from me. Not because of me. They wanted something from me. But that's why it is. And that's why, as a matter of cold fact, you know, I've got almost done. But I never did finish it. The second volume to my French, which brings the story up to 1870, I never have published it.
You still have that as a project? That
No, it's all done. I did it in 50.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yes. Well, then I went down, of course, to Seville. But now I knew also about Madrid. And before I went over to the Library of Congress on my way east, this time on the second time. And he told me about Campillo. He said that Campillo had made a guide, had asked us, that's the Library of Congress, to publish it, but it's got so damn many mistakes in it that we wouldn't touch it with a 10-foot pole. But you better watch out carefully, because he's boss. Be careful of what you're saying, and be nice to him. So I came down to Madrid. I talked to him. And I told him what it was all, and that they were ready, and they were thinking, and have under submission for that. But that I wanted to have certain things, and so he began to give me permission to think.
And he was pretty confident that the Library of Congress would.
Oh, yes, I'm quite sure he was. I painted him up on, but there's another reason too that I'll come to in a minute. He was absolute boss, and nobody saw anything, or any of his people in there ever moved a finger without his knowing it. He himself had four jobs at the time. He was the private librarian to the king at the time, and a few other things. Into there. He's money mad. I knew that too. But I got to see the in his thing, I got to see them all that I wanted or that I knew about. But there's a whole series that I wanted to see into there for curiosity that they couldn't get back in Washington. They got a lot of other things, but not that. And I bribed the porters just to take a look. I told them I wouldn't have take notes. Just wanted to see a residencia. I just wanted to see one.
What was the subject
matter? A residencia, which is a review of the governor's work that they had to have every time they completed a term. They were there.
Was this going to be the reviews for the entire Southwest, or just
no,
for...
No, for the review. No. A Spanish governor of Louisiana. For example, Trudeau was lieutenant governor from 1792 to 99. In 99, they would have to, before he changed, then they'd have a complete review. That's a residencia. It only went for the governors, but that's all right. I'll give you a bad example, but that's all right. Into there. But I wanted to see one. That's all there was to it. So I bribed the fellas, and they, three of them took me back into the stacks. One of them watched the entrance to his room. One of them watched the outside to see that he come, because of their jobs and their necks. And they brought me out, one of them, the one of Miron, the one of Grandelli into there, and look, and begged me, hurry up, which I didn't take any notes. All I did take was the reference to where it was in the archives. Mm-hmm. See, then, and I wanted to give it to the Library of Congress so that they can get it.
They can write.
And they write anything they say they got to have it. You know, if you give them the right numbers,
right.
They got to have it. That's the only thing I wanted into there. But I, you know, I was there a month or more, all kinds of volumes, all kinds of documents, because that's a central portion of what I was doing now, into there. And he came over and he says, see, he says, you got all my workers working for you. He says, are you really a student? I said, yes. I said, give me 3 more days. At the end of 3 more days, I went in to him. I said, Señor Director, here is a list, a tremendous list, that I want copied. Here, I don't care who you have it in there, here is a deposit of 500 pesos or 1,000, I've forgotten, it's quite a bit of money, and his eyes opened up.